You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Onyx Maps. Now, if you haven't had the opportunity to get Onyx Maps on your phone, you need to get Onyx Maps on your phone, and I'm going to tell you why. Number one, I am the kind of guy who likes to know where I'm at all times, and I like to do a lot of running and gunning. So there's times where access is very important for me, knowing where I was at, knowing how to get to a specific location, especially in the dark of morning or night, getting in and getting out. And the best part for me is that I have GPS on my phone, and Onyx allows you to leave basically breadcrumbs and leave a trail or your access routes on your phone, save those access routes, and then use your GPS going in and out of your tree stand locations every single day. And it's awesome because you won't get lost in the dark. And I use that so much, that little portion in itself, so much throughout the season that it's probably the most useful function of that app. Now, you can also leave waypoints like where your trail cameras are at, where your tree stands are at, where you see scrapes and rubs or marking trailheads or campsites. This is the perfect app for a do-it-yourself hunter. I mean, really for all hunters, because it allows you to journal your properties that you hunt, right? And the more information you have, the more successful you will be on a yearly basis, because you keep gathering data and gathering data and gathering data. And soon you'll see trends in that data, and those trends will lead you to hunting more efficiently and becoming more successful, in my opinion. So go to Onyx, or wherever you download your apps, pick up Onyx, and you can use the discount code NATION20, NATION20, and save 20% off for first-time users. Onyx Maps. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. And today we got a crazy episode. And when I say crazy, I kind of mean short, because the story is roughly short. So this is a mix of a BS session hunter profile podcast mixed with a success story at the back end of the episode, because the guy shows up to hunt his rut vacation, right, on a farm in northern Missouri, and he has a meeting at 9 a.m. in the morning. So he walks in, he doesn't know what to expect, buck comes in, and let's just say he is 15 minutes late to his meeting. So a really fun episode. I like episodes like this where the guys are getting it done right off the bat. Now, I have never had a hunt or a season where I walk into the woods, I kill, and then I'm done. Or a rut vacation where I walk into the woods and I kill on hunt number one. I've never had that before. So I don't know if I would like it, because this year I did the grind, and I love the grind. And in previous years, you know, one or two days and I've tagged out, I've done that. But I've never had a walk-off homer type of deal. And I wouldn't mind it. I know my wife wouldn't mind it, but that's what today's episode is about. Now, before we get into the episode, I want to talk a little bit about wasp broadheads. So I know you guys have heard me say that the Boss 4-blade is one of my favorite heads that wasp offers, and it's true. But this year, I don't know why, but I said to myself, I want to use a mechanical again. Halfway through the rut, and I put a jackhammer on my, on my arrow, and my buck this year was at 32 yards, slightly quartering towards me, hit lung, backside liver, frontside lung, backside liver, and my buck was dead in 20 yards, right? Just really, really good blood trail, pass through. I have a heavy arrow, so it's a combination of all these things that really makes a broadhead perform very well. But I just love the company and the people that work there. And I find myself leaning towards companies that not only make good products like Wasp, but have great people working for them, like one of their engineers, Fred Dougherty. One of my favorite times of year is when I call up Fred and we have a good conversation. It's almost like pre-hunt, you know, the preseason conversation. So what are you doing this year? Where are you going? What trips you taking? You got any good deer you're going to be chasing? And I find myself loving to work with companies like that. And not only are their products American made, but they have really good people answering the phones and making the products and designing the products. So that is why I love Wasp. So not only do we have the great company, the great people, now we have a great product to top it all off. And if you want to find out more information about Wasp broadheads and their fixed blades and their mechanical blades, broadheads, you need to go to wasparchery.com, and you won't be disappointed if you have a Wasp on the end of your arrow. So we also have a discount. Let me take a look and see what that is right here. It is Wasp Nine Fingers. That's the number nine, followed by the word fingers. And you're going to receive 20% off of your purchase. WaspArchery.com. Now, let's get into today's podcast. That is a Hunter Profile BS session. Success story. Right, with Jeremy Nicholson of Missouri. All right, on the phone with me today, Mr. Jeremy Nicholson. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Hey, man, I can't complain. You must be pretty happy. I sent a message out to everybody saying, hey, why don't you send me some pictures. I want to see how everybody's success has been throughout the season. And you send me a picture of an absolute brute. I love when deer look like that. That just look like they're almost on steroids. their bodies are so buff.
Yeah. It was a pretty special morning and pretty special year up there at the farm that we hunt up there. So it was definitely one to remember and be able to look at him on the wall for the rest of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jeremy, why don't you start by letting everybody know where you live and what do you do for a living?
Yeah, of course. So I live just outside of Springfield, Missouri. I'm just born and raised on a Jersey farm, just down here. And for job wise, I'm over the western part of Missouri for a trade school. They're called Universal Technical Institute. So what I do is I go around the high schools and auto classes, collision classes, diesel programs, and I speak to students about our programs. And whenever we get some that are interested, I sit down and do interviews with them and their families to see if they're, you know, a good fit. So that's what I do for a living.
And that goes into, and then that gets them into the trade school?
Yeah, correct. And, gotcha. Depending on what school they go to, or we have 13 different campuses. So, you know, we have an auto program, we've got a diesel program, motorcycle, we have marine. So, it's, you know, really geared towards the, you know, students that want to be technicians in dealerships. That's our bread and butter.
Right. Okay. So quick question about this. Have you seen an uptick in people interested in trade jobs over the years, as opposed to going to school like college traditionally?
Yes, we have. You know, the trend when I was I graduated in 03, the trend was, you know, you go to high school, you graduate high school, you go to college, and you figure out what you want to do after college, you know, basically.
Yeah.
And today that's turned into a pretty, you know, it's turned into a, you know, a deal where today there's a lot of people graduating colleges and there's not necessarily a job out there for them. So it's been a lot. We've been very busy. The trade schools, it's kind of getting into the counselors' heads that, you know, there's other options for, you know, for students other than just going to a four-year university, you know? So it's been really good. You know, you just got to find the right fit for the student and go from there.
Right. So how many years is one of your programs? I'm sure it differs depending on what they're going into.
Yeah, of course. So like for Western Missouri, for my territory, the auto and diesel program are very popular. A diesel program is 11 months, and that student does a diesel program. They will get done in 11 months. And then we actually have manufacturer specific options with like Peterbilt and Cummins and Freightliner. And students can actually go into those programs and we'll do the training for, let's say, Freightliner. And then we place them in those dealerships and they already have the training.
Oh, wow. Wow. And so, probably yeah. half, if not way less than college debt coming out of that.
Yeah, for sure. It's it definitely is, you know, we're not the cheapest school in as a community college, but we're definitely going to be cheaper than a four-year route. You know, when I got my bachelor's, it took me 5.5 because I sucked at college algebra, you know.
I'll make that sentence shorter. I just sucked at college when I went. No, I was a weekend guy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Me too. So yeah, it's good. It's a good option for you know, people who want to get out and get their training, you know, get through an intense training, graduate and get placed in the industry. I mean, these kids are 19, 20 years old and they're working in dealerships. You know, it's a pretty good deal.
That's, that's an amazing deal. I'll tell you, the more I read into it, the more I kind of educate myself on what the world needs, you know, like doctors and nurses and trade type work is probably what I will be suggesting to my kids when, you know, of course that, you know, in 15 years, things could change when they start graduating college or high school and whatnot. But I really feel like I didn't benefit from college really. I don't know if I'm going to suggest that to my kids. You know, if they want to do it, fine. But if not, there's definitely other options out there. So, yeah, cool.
Yeah, yeah. Today, the actual stat is that today, 48% of college graduates actually work in a career that they didn't study for.
Yeah, yeah. That's ridiculous.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about deer hunting, man, shall we?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right. So you're from Missouri. Talk to me a little bit about the area of Missouri that you spend a majority of your time in.
So the majority of my time, I'm in southwest Missouri, around the Springfield area. We've got a family farm here. And then we have a couple other, places that we can hunt. And, you know, it's, you know, through probably 10 or 15 years ago, it's grown to where there's some more cropland. But, you know, there's a lot of acorns. There's, you know, some stuff like that. We're right on the edge of like the Ozark Mountains, so to speak. So, you know, you've got ridges, but you also have some cropland. And there's some good deer around here in southwest Missouri, you know. My two brothers and my dad, we kind of go together, do everything together throughout the year. And we run all around 20 cameras and have around 1500 acres that we're fortunate enough to be able to chase these whitetails.
Awesome. And that's on your southern Missouri pieces, right? Because you also have a farm on the north end of Missouri too, right?
Yeah, correct. So we spend the majority of our time down in southwest Missouri, but then we go for 4 to 6 days up in northwest Missouri, where we have a place that we're fortunate enough to hunt. And, you know, it's not a lease. We don't pay any money for it. It's just a family friend that lets us hunt. And we've been doing that for 9 years. And it's probably where we've learned the most about hunting. You know, when you can leave family and, you know, kiss the wife and kids bye and then go just completely focus on deer hunting, you know, and really getting some tree stand therapy in, you know, you learn a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the difference between the southern piece and the northern piece?
The difference, I mean, soil is one of the differences. So, you know, it's rockier down here in southwest Missouri up north. I mean, we're 50 miles from Iowa, so it's not really much different than southwest Iowa as far as the terrain goes, but you know, deer are a little different, but, you know, the deer are bigger. The bodies are bigger on the deer up northwest Missouri, but you know, as far as terrain wise, there's just more cropland. There's deeper ravines and deeper ditches up in northwest Missouri than there is around here.
Gotcha. So automatically, for some reason, you say southwest Missouri, I think big tracts of timber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not really big tracts. So like, okay. where we hunt, like if I were to go, you know, Dan, if I were to go 45 minutes south of here and a little east, it would be all timber, like gotcha. Huge tracts of timber. Like that's like the Branson area.
Right.
I'm just west of Springfield. You literally go 30 miles west of where I'm at, and you're getting into like the eastern Kansas style of terrain.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're right there kind of on, I mean, we're not talking big tracts. I mean, you don't see too many tracts of even 100 acre timbers around here, or 50 acre timbers.
Right. Now, I know
some, but not very many.
Northern Missouri was concerned a handful of years ago, there was an EHD outbreak that was really bad. Did you guys suffer through any of that?
Yeah, we believe we did. They're trying to think of the years. I mean, there was around the 2011, 2012, the first couple of years we ran cameras, we were getting several mature deer on camera. You know, my brother killed a really nice, you know, really mature deer, was in the 160s as an eight. And it was, you know, just a lot of mature deer up there. And then after that, we went for 3 or 4 years after 11 and 12, we went for a couple of years and maybe saw one mature deer.
Yeah.
We didn't go and like survey the land and really, really, you know, walk through it all, but we didn't technically find any, but there, something was different. That's for sure.
Right. Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about, the buck that you ended up harvesting this year. Was that on the northern piece or the southern piece?
That was on the northern piece. Yep.
Northern piece. Okay. So let's talk about this farm, break it down even further and talk about the specific farm that this buck was living on. What was the amount of acreage on this farm or the area that you had access to?
The area we have access to is split by a creek, and you know the east side's around 150 acres, and we don't even hunt that. It's just all open, huge ag fields, and then the west side is going to be, it's probably around 150, 200 acres as well, and most of that is actually wooded. It's a big woodlot. It's a big timber track, and the property we can hunt on owns half of it. So we can only hunt half of it. And there's basically a dead end road that runs right through the middle of the track.
Gotcha. Okay. So is that your access route then? Is that dead end road?
Yeah. Yeah. That's our access route. I mean, when I say a dead end road, it's like a path. I mean, there's not any houses down there.
Right.
The only thing that's going down that road is the combines, you know, and then a neighboring property owner or something like that. But the way we access it kind of is a little disadvantage we found, because we're accessing it from the high side. I mean, we're coming in from the west.
Yeah.
So it's really caused us to be, we have to be pretty tricky, with access. And I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, everything we're doing is perfect with the access, but it's, you know, we don't really have much of a choice unless we want to park on the opposite end, on the east end, and then try to walk across the creek. And that'd be a pretty good walk as well. But
yeah. So is that east side that you mentioned that's all ag, is that like the main destination food source for these deer?
Not necessarily, because right on the west side of the river, you know, is probably another 50-60 acre crop field as well. So where I killed this deer, I was on the north side of that big crop field, just in a funnel area, pinch point. And so the destination food source could really be on both sides, is what I would call the destination.
Gotcha. All right. So there's multiple ag fields around that block of timber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the bedding's going to be northwest, north and west of the destination food sources.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a bit about the, you know, you've mentioned that half of it's ag, right? The half of the big block of timber you have access to. There's a creek that basically splits the property. How are the deer making their way through this property? Are there specific terrain features that you're focusing on? Ridges? How are they moving?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's two. I mean, the big timber tract is split. Is divided from a north section and a south section. The north section we can't hunt. The south section we can. Okay. And the river's east of there, and it's running northwest, and it ends up running north of the entire big timber tract. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So, I mean, majority of the deer bed there. And then there's another, basically we call it the Triangle Jungle, and it's probably 15 acres of just the nastiest stuff you even imaginable.
I love
and
that
we
stuff.
Can't hunt on that either. Yeah, we can't. I mean, that's not our property. So, but there's deer in there. You see them go in there. I mean, they're, you know, the game cam picture I sent you, that deer was coming out of there.
Okay.
Okay. He had just crossed the creek and he was coming out of there. So we know deer use that. You know, and that is actually east of the river. And, you know, so we're basically where we hunt is southwest of that Triangle Jungle.
Gotcha. Okay. So there is a main divider, but it doesn't seem like it bothers the deer at all. It's easily getting in and out of there. They cross that creek or that river all the time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, if I were to pick three of the bedding areas, there'd be a northeast bedding, you know, a northwest bedding, and then a southwest bedding. And there's basically, it forms a triangle. And, you know, they work in and around there.
Gotcha. All right. So, so you've identified over the years, three main bedding areas, on that property. Is what's your hunting strategy throughout the year? I mean, do you key on those three bedding or do you key on terrain features or field edges or what's your strategy there?
Yeah. Well, our strategy when we first started was just to sit on the field edges, you know, and we found out real quick when we were hunting, you know, in the rut, we're like, we have got to get in the timber. Like, you know, that's where it's going to happen. And that's where the big deer are. I mean, we would go for a weekend and see like, I mean, one year I remember seeing like 20 different bucks, but they're all like 2-year-olds, you know, year and a half olds. And I was just watching a field edge. So we've went from, you know, hunting field edges to diving in to these pinch points. We figured out how the deer like to use this timber. And we just access it from these ravines and these ditches. And then we plop up in a stand and get tight to the bedding area and sit there and wait.
Gotcha. So you mentioned that accessing this property from the high side is a bit of a disadvantage. How do your access routes, how do you put yourself back into the advantage with your access routes?
So one thing we do, actually where I killed this deer was on the northern part of the property. And that was in between the northeast bedding and the northwest bedding.
Yep.
Okay. And that was actually right in a pinch point where there was like, where the timber really narrows down. And that's where I was hunting. The way I get to that stand is just basically hope and pray that nothing's in the hayfield whenever I walk in there early.
I got a couple of those spots too, man. I got a couple of those spots.
Yeah. But when we dive into the timber, okay. We have we park right next to this big oak tree and we walk, one stand location. We walk in and we've cut out, you can get to this like, I don't know if it's a ditch head, whatever you call the, you know, where the ditch kind of starts, in the timber.
Yep.
We've cut a, you know, a little lane out to it. You can get to it. You only have to walk into the timber like 30 yards, 40 yards, and then it just dives down. And I mean, you can, you know, we brought a chainsaw in there and cleaned it all out. You can just walk right down it and then plop up in a stand. That's the best way we can get to the stands. One of them is on the very back end of the property. On our way to where we park, we drop like my brother off right there where he needs to go in from the road, and he just walks in from that way, depending on the wind.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. It sounds like over the, you know, over the 9 years that you guys have been hunting on this piece of property, you've really been able to refine the access and the stand locations to put yourself in the best position.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's been, you know, like I said, it's a learning process, and, you know, we still don't have it perfect, but, you know, it's definitely helped us. We've had a lot more success as of late, you know, doing that. So, especially when you're coming in the morning, you know, and you're, that's the most difficult time, because we found that, you know, up in northern Missouri, these hay fields, you know, they've got clover in them. You know, they like to spend a lot of time in the evenings in those hay fields, just bedding down, just hanging out.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the way I accessed this stand that where I harvested this buck was, I'm basically walking right through the, almost right on the edge of this hay field, and just hoping that nothing is out there and hoping it's dark enough that they can't see me.
Yeah. That's cool. So, let's talk about the strategy. Like, are you guys able to plant any food plots on this farm? Do you run trail cameras throughout the year? How do you know what you're getting into every year as far as the deer are concerned?
Yes. Yeah. So we don't do any food plots. We'd like to, we just haven't. We get up there. We're able to get up there in August every year. We try to do the first week of August, first or second weekend of August. And we put cameras out, and we put trophy rocks out, and we get pictures of deer, you know, and then we go try to check them in September, you know, middle of September, late September. And then at late September, we change them all over to scrapes. And then we come up in November and we check what we've got, basically.
Gotcha.
So this year was a lot, was different. We normally put four cameras out. This year we put six. And, you know, I hear a lot of people just talking about putting them on trails. And I think that's a huge advantage. I mean, you don't get near as many deer pictures, but we put them on trails. And it's amazing when we took the data from this, from August in September, and we looked at all the pictures we had on the trophy rocks, and then all the pictures we had just on the trails. We obviously had more pictures of deer on the trophy rocks, but the intel that we got on the trails were way better than the trophy rock, right? And there was a lot more. I mean, there was a lot better deer. Okay, I mean, we had quality deer on those trails. You know, we could actually see kind of where this deer was coming from. We have pictures of the deer I shot. We had pictures of the deer my brother shot. He shot a toad, like 3 days later, from us. So anyway, this is probably the best year as far as having mature deer that we've had up there. And as far as trail cam intel going into it, this is probably the best year out of nine.
Wow. That's awesome. It's always and you know, despite what your trail cameras do for you or how you use that information, it's always good knowing what's running around, you know, because there's a lot of guys who go in blind, maybe shoot the first deer that walks by, and secretly what they don't know is there's a monster lurking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we had good pictures of deer this year, especially on the scrapes, and yeah, definitely helps your mental game going into an all day set for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. All right. So when do you guys typically start to hunt this farm?
Yeah. So typically we're going up there the first weekend in November, which the last couple of years has been like, you know, the second through the fifth or sixth or what, you know, somewhere around there. We're normally going home about the sixth or the seventh. That's just the way it ends up working out. Because then the next weekend is opening day of rifle season for Missouri. And we don't rifle hunt up there. We just never have. And they, you know, the landowners say it's just like World War III going on. So we just have never been up there.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we've always done that. Well, this year it happened to fall a little bit, you know, the rifle season started later. So we were able to go up, you know, we started November, everybody got up there the evening of November 6th. And then we hunted till the 10th. That was the plan. You know, and we were super excited. That's the latest we've ever been up there. So, and I think that had something to do with how much luck we had.
Right. So not necessarily November 1st, but soon after that, you guys are typically up there starting to work the farm.
For sure. For sure. There were a few years we went up like the third weekend of October and it was dead. I took my son up there one weekend for youth season, which is like, you know, it was around the last weekend of October. And it was dead. So I don't know, man, bad weather or what, but we just hit it wrong.
Right. So as far as the trail camera intel that you guys get off this farm every year, what are your guys' goals? I mean, do you guys have a conversation with each other and say, okay, we're only shooting 4-year-olds or 3-year-olds or we're only shooting, you know, 140s and higher? Or what's the conversation that you guys have every year about the quality of deer that you want to harvest?
Yeah. So our conversations are mature deer. Meaning when I say mature, we would like for it to be a 4-year-old or older, is what we like. We don't really look, I mean, obviously the inches are awesome, but some years we go up there and we've had a mature deer or two every year up there, but some years they may be like 125.
Yeah.
You know, and he may just be a tank, you know?
Yeah.
So we're just going up there to shoot the most mature deer we have on picture,
gotcha,
on camera.
So,
so that's what we're looking at. And, you know, I mean, the biggest deer we've ever killed up there was the one, Shane killed, and my brother, and we never had a picture of him. He came from the South and he was not around here, and he was a giant, you know?
Gotcha. Okay. So how, you know, with that trail camera intel, how many shooters, you know, obviously you got some bonus bucks that could come through during the rut, but before the rut even kicks off, how many quote unquote shooters call your farm home?
I would say like this year was a good year and we had three. That I would say call it home.
Gotcha.
Some years we have, may have one,
yeah,
you know, or two,
yeah,
you know, back before the HD thing. I mean, we would have three or four. I mean, one year we had three that were in the 60s or over.
Yeah.
And they were mature deer. So gotcha. Anyway, this was a, you know, this is a really good year for us.
Gotcha. Okay. So question, you got you and your brothers, that's three people, and your dad go up during bow season, right? So four people.
Yeah.
Four people on this farm. How do you guys divvy up the ground? Because I hunt a farm or a combination of farms that is roughly 1,100 acres combined, you know, multiple different farms, but they all kind of are in the same area. And I share that farm with, you know, multiple other hunters. And sometimes it can seem crowded, even though I have access to that much ground. So how do you guys divvy it up?
Mm-hmm. Well, we just have a lot of different stand locations. And I mean, for whatever reason, when we first started, you know, hunting up here, we just kind of walked it and I like this area, I like this area, I like this area. And we just kind of all, this is, you know, we have Shane's stand, we have Evan's stand, we have Dad's stand, we have my stand, we have, and then we can alternate them, or, you know, we have some, you know, I've got a saddle that I can go do my own thing. If the wind's not right, I can, sometimes we partner up. And then actually 3 years ago, we talked to another landowner, and he actually let us hunt a piece that's about a mile west of where we hunt, and it's an 80 acre CRP field, and it's really good too. So we can hunt that, and that's completely different deer. That's what's awesome about it.
Cool. Yeah, it's good to have. It's definitely good to have options. I was just kind of curious if you guys would have brother like wrestling matches to see who goes to the
No,
best stand.
we're pretty good. There may be some tongue in cheek type stuff going on, but I mean it's pretty it's normally pretty good. I mean, I think last year, sometimes we just film each other. You know, we'll just go together if the wind's bad. You know, we'll bring a climber in with us and put a climber over the top, or you know, and hunt together. I mean, that's, you know, we just want to go up there and honestly go up there and remove work away from the equation and
Absolutely.
kids, and no offense to the wives, but get away from the wife a little bit and just enjoy it. It's different up there. It's just quieter. You don't hear as many vehicles. You don't hear horns. You don't hear as much as you do down here in Southwest Missouri.
Gotcha. All right, so let's talk about this buck that you harvested this year. When did you first know about him? Is this a returning customer from multiple years of knowledge and trail camera intel about him, or is this a first timer?
No, he was a first timer. I mean, we had pictures of him starting in when I checked the cameras in September. We had this deer. He was coming from the north. I had him on. We had him on a trail, and he came through from the north, heading south, three different nights around between like 9 and 10:30. You know, and I'm thinking, okay, he's definitely bedding. He's probably bedding in the northeast section bedding area in that triangle jungle. Okay, you know, that's what I thought. So then we had some other deer, but that's whenever I first saw him. And then I moved a camera a little bit deeper in there on a heavy crossing coming right out of that jungle, because there was a crossing coming out of the jungle coming across the creek, and it wide right there, so it made a hard south trail, and then it made a and then it was just going straight on to the west. So I wanted to put a camera right there on that Y. And when we went up there in November and checked that trail camera, I mean, there was deer all over that crossing.
Gotcha.
And he was one of them. We got one of the coolest. We got some of the coolest pictures. We have a picture of that deer that I killed, that he had came up right out of the creek, come up off the bank. He stopped right in front of the camera and he shook like a dog. We got like three or four pictures of it. It's pretty cool.
See the water coming off of him?
Oh yeah.
Oh
Yeah.
man,
Yeah. It
that's
was cool.
awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you kind of identified you identified that he was a shooter, and then you're like, okay, well, we got him pegged. You know, on was there a specific wind that he was crossing, or was he crossing this every day, random winds?
No, it was, I mean, I wouldn't say we had him pegged. I mean, we knew he was in the area. I didn't check exactly wind, if it was the same wind or anything like that, but if we were guessing, he was staying north in the, you know, north of where we could hunt for the majority of the time. And then he was coming on us, you know, on occasion, basically. And that's, you know, that's all we really had of him.
Okay. So out of all the deer, as far as the hit list on the farm, where did he rank?
He was number one.
Cool.
The other deer, were right around his caliber, just different types. Like his rack and just the way he looked was just, I mean, just kind of got, well, just got me fired up. You know, I mean, he's just a cool deer. And, but we just, you know, that was on the northern section. And we've gotten pictures in the past of deer that are really good deer, and we've never seen him when we go up there for that weekend. So it's not like we were like, holy cow, we're gonna get an opportunity at him.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's, we didn't just assume that we were gonna get to see him, because we've had a lot of good deer up there in 9 years and we've never seen them. You know, they're not even there. So it's not like we were just fired up, like I'm gonna see this deer this weekend. But we were just going to go up there and see what happens, you know.
Gotcha. Yeah, absolutely. You check your trail cameras, you know he's somewhere around, but you don't necessarily know if he's there right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right.
Exactly.
Cool.
You know, and if
So,
I were to hunt this deer, like the heart of this deer's territory is not where I can hunt.
okay. All
Right?
right.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay? So like his bedding areas are north of where we can hunt, if
Okay.
that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. All right.
So it's not like I can just go diving into his home territory, and you know, I mean, where this camera is on the north part of where we can hunt, and the bedding areas are north of there.
Okay, so it's almost like you're hunting a travel corridor. How far from the tree stand that you shot him out of was the bedding area?
Well, I was right in between with the northeast bedding area and the northwest. I was right in between both. I would say 300 yards.
300 yards. Okay. So
And I was south of them.
So you're smack dab in the middle of two bedding areas.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So talk to me about this particular tree stand location and the access that you used to get there.
So the tree stand that I was at that morning there's a ridge that runs east and west, and it is on a, you know, the timber is between, it's between two timber tracks. Okay. So it gets real narrow, there where I'm hunting. So it's about, when I say real narrow, I mean like probably 75 yards wide, 100 yards wide. And, you know, like I said, we come in from the high side. So we park, I walk through the hay field, right? And, you know, just biting my nails. And then I take a hard north turn. I walk about 150 yards and the hay field comes to a point right on the ridge. And that's where the timber starts. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm walking north. I hit the ridge. The ridge is running east and west. It kind of tees right there. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And I go right down this ridge about 10 yards and I plop up in a stand. So I'm above, I can see behind me in the hayfield where I walked in. And then all below me, there's a ridge running east and west, but right where my stand is, the ridge dog legs back and makes a sharp turn and goes straight south.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm right there on that point, and there's a floodplain to the east of me. And it is, we call it the bowl because that's what it looks like. Literally this ridge runs all the way around it to the creek. And there's probably a 15 acre bowl right there, that leads back into that bedding area I was talking about. And then there's, I can see all below me and in this finger of timber that's running, you know, to the west, to that bigger timber track.
Okay. So,
and yeah, go ahead.
What wind do you prefer to hunt that point with? Because it sounds like when you said dog leg, when that ridge dog legs, now you have way more wind possibilities to hunt that particular stand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, really in the mornings, you know, you could have a south wind and it's blowing right up over the top of everything, you know, but I would prefer just a north wind where it runs, it just runs straight, you know, straight down back to where I walked in from, you know. Gotcha. Or north, maybe a north, maybe easterly, but really it's a really good spot wind location, especially in the mornings, because anything's coming from the south, southwest. I mean, these deer are way below you. I mean, the stand's 25 feet high and it's about 20, I'd say it's 20 feet high and you're elevated even on top of that. So you're looking, I mean, you're on the ridge and you're looking down in the bowl. So you're way over 30 feet.
Yeah. Yeah. So the deer that are coming through there, what kind of shot offerings are you going to get?
So you've got deer that can come, that'll go up right by you, basically right on your stand, and go up up on the ridge right there on that point. You have deer that a lot of the deer come in front. There's a dry creek. It's like full of sand, you know, where when it floods, it's a drainage. And it's out in front of you to the north. So deer use that. They run east and west there. I mean, that's from bedding area to bedding area. And that shot's probably 25, 30 yards.
Okay. So you got plenty of access. You get, your access is good. They're coming from multiple areas, and they are, and they offer you, it's offering a ton of shot opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing I like about it is the reason why I sat there that morning is I didn't have very long to hunt, and I wasn't diving into the timber, and I could see through the trees, the leaves have fallen, and I can see through the trees to the north of me, you know, and I can see this, there's probably a 20 acre field that normally is in crops. The flood wasn't, you know, the flood, they weren't able to get crops in. Well, I can see any deer that are in that field.
Okay.
And you know, and that's, so that, you know, that's what I like about it is you can see any deer out in that field and you can see a long ways. It's just a good spot to get into.
Cool. All right. So how many days have you been hunting, until you had the encounter with this buck?
Zero. Are you talking about up there?
Yeah. None. So this was the first day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what were, so was, this was an afternoon hunt or a morning hunt?
It was a morning hunt.
Okay. So was he the first deer that walked by, or what did you see when you got into the stand?
Yeah, he was the only deer I saw all morning.
I love those. So, I love these stories.
Yeah.
I love these stories. Yeah, I literally just recorded a podcast where a guy's like, yeah, day one rut vacation, smoked a big buck.
How's that make you feel after 13 days?
I know, right? I know. But I tell you what.
Yeah.
I personally needed a grind session because, like I said on some of my other podcasts, man, I felt like I've got off easy the past 3 years, the previous three years. So I know, I love hunting and I love sitting in the stand, and I know you do too. But okay, so it's a morning hunt. Sun's coming up.
Yeah.
What happens from there?
Yeah, well, I'll back up just a little bit more because I get to the stand, you know, and it's probably an hour before daylight, and get to the stand, climb up in it, and we had checked them in August, but we removed the seats on all of them until we get there so the squirrels don't chew them up. So I get up there, and this particular stand was, it was one of those, I think it was like a bone collector, like Walmart stand. It's pretty big, but it has like the like at the hammock style seat.
Okay.
You okay? You follow me? So we had taken that off. All right. Well, I didn't have it with me. My brothers and my dad were coming up, that evening, and I was already up there for work. So I get up there and I'm like, crap, you gotta be kidding me. I don't have a seat. So I get up there and I'm standing, right. And it, you know, it gets daylight and I'm looking around in that bowl area. Cause deer just appear out there. It's pretty, they come on you pretty quiet over there. You know, I'm glassing, looking that way from the east, cause they cross the river and come that way. And I'm looking back to the west, making sure nothing's coming behind me. And then I can start kind of glassing out into that field to the north. You recall, you know, there's probably a 20 acre open field that I can just see through the trees, right?
Yep.
Little bits and pieces. Well, it gets light and, you know, it's probably around 7, and I see a deer at the very northwest corner of that field. And I was like, that's a good deer. And you just almost tell, he's just a big body deer. And I looked at it, and he was working a scrape in the very corner. And his rack was in the trees, and he was working the tree. And then he put his head down, and he's, you know, he's working that scrape. And I can tell it's a good deer. I can't tell what deer it is or anything like that. And, you know, we haven't talked about, I'm supposed to be working this day as well. Okay. I have a presentation that I go to.
Oh, that's
and
right.
I'm supposed to be at, yes. So I have a presentation. I actually wasn't even planning on hunting this morning. I was in my hotel room for work the night before, and my presentation is about 20 minutes away where from I can hunt. And I'm thinking, you know, I just want to go out and, I was going to do a presentation that day, and I was going to meet my brothers and my dad that evening, and then we were going to hunt for 4 days. Well, I got antsy, and I was like, you know, I've got a good wind. I'm going to go in there. Daylight savings time, I can hunt for a couple hours, and I can just check it out. You know, I can get out there a little bit. So that happens. So I have to be in a interview or in a presentation at 9:15. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to hunt till 8:45. Okay. That's what my goal is. Just an observation sit. Nothing crazy, okay? Just to get my feet wet. So I see this deer out there, northwest corner, you know, this deer's 300 yards away. And I'm like, I'm not a big caller, but I was like, I'm gonna call. And I have this, it's like the, I don't know. It's like the, I think it's a mad game calls, like buck, just a buck grunt. It's a real, it's a pretty loud one. I like the sound of it, but I never really grunted a buck in. So, you know, I get the grunt call and I do a couple of grunts, pretty loud. And I put the call up, I get my binoculars up, and mind you, he was working a scrape when I was grunting. Put the grunt call down, put my binoculars up, and he is, when I see him, he's already turned around and he's facing me. And he's staring a hole right into the corner of where I'm at. And he had a stare off with me for a couple minutes, seemed like. And all of a sudden he just starts walking towards me. You know, he's heading my way. Yeah. You know, he's got his eyes up, his love head, that. And he's walking.
Love that.
Yeah. And so I'm like, wow, he's coming. And wasn't too crazy. I wasn't 100% sure he was a shooter. But I knew he was a good deer. Okay. Cause I'm looking through the binoculars and looking through brush and trees. I mean, I'm 75 yards into this timber. There's 75 yards of timber between me and the field edge. So he starts walking my way. Well, he gets behind this big bunch of trees that I can't see anything in the field. I don't see him for probably 4 or 5 minutes. I'm glassing, can't find him. So I didn't want him to lose interest. So I grunted at him again. And immediately I picked him up again right after. It's like he was standing there is what I think of it. He's just standing there looking.
Yeah.
And I immediately grunted and I immediately saw him. So I'm looking at him. He gets in where I can see him really good now. He's probably 150, 150 yards from me. And he's walking straight to me. And I've got a little opening there. I've got, you know, an opening there where he can walk straight into the timber. And I was just thinking in my head the whole time, he's probably going to just stop at the timber edge and wait to see something, you know, to identify what the noise was. When he hit that timber edge, he didn't even stop. He didn't break stride, nothing. I mean, he just walked right in there with us. I mean, he's 75 yards. When he made that little cross from the field edge to the timber, yeah, my body completely changed. I'm not lying. Like, I'm like, this is happening. Right. You know, I better get my crap together and I better make this work because this is going to happen. And I checked him once again with my binoculars just to make sure. And whenever I looked at him through the binoculars, you know, I just wanted to double check, and I looked, and all I could just see was, I just remember seeing mass, you know, mass, and he was a 10 point. So I'm like, a definite shooter. You know, I put my binoculars down and he's walking straight at me. Okay. He's straight north of me, walking at me. He gets to about 50 yards. And I think he's just going to walk straight in. Remember, I'm on I'm on the point of this ridge at Dog Legs back to the south.
Yep.
And I'm right there and he's walking straight at this point. And, all of a sudden about 40 yards, he decides, I don't know if there was a limb there he didn't want to hop over or what, but he starts going back to the southwest. And I'm like, why is he doing that? He comes back. So I range an area that was going to be about a 35, 40 yard shot. So I'm getting ready. I'm like, am I going to have to make this happen? And I'm getting ready. And he goes around whatever he was going around. And he just got back on track and just started walking right up that draw that I was talking about, that flood creek, you know, that dry creek that's right in front of me. He gets on that and he starts walking straight down it. So I'm going to have about a 25 yard shot. Well, as soon as he gets around this tree, he decides to get out of that and walk. So he's straight north of me and he's walking to the east. And he just, as soon as he gets around this tree, I draw back and I thought I was going to shoot him. Well, he just turns tight on that tree and comes out of that little creek bed. And he's walking basically quartering two, but he's walking, he's like 15 yards. Okay. Yeah. And he's like closing quickly. And when I look back on it, he is assuming that the deer, when I was grunting, he's assuming that deer is up on top of the ridge behind me.
Oh, okay.
That's, I guarantee that's what's happening, because I had another deer a couple of years ago do the same thing. He wasn't a shooter, but they just think that the deer, that the sound they're hearing is behind me, up on top of the hayfield, right? So he's just walking away. And he gets to 15 yards, and he's inside 15, I'm fully drawn, and I murped at him, you know, tried to be really quiet. But as soon as I did that, I mean, he just like all four legs just
froze, I mean, up,
jolted, just slammed into the ground. Right. And he was slight quartering two when he did that, like he went quartering two just a little more. And I mean, I could still squeeze it in. So I, you know, I was there, I let the shot go and I shot to the right just a little bit and I hit top shoulder. Okay.
Okay.
And he goes barreling off out of there and goes right in front of me, runs to the east and stops about 60, 70 yards out there in that bowl area. And I'm glassing him and he's looking back into the, towards the field to the north, and he's looking and I can't see anything because I don't have penetration through the, where he's looking, I shot him on the, you know, on his right side and he's looking, and I can only see the left side, but I know I hit him like at a steep angle, you know, and I hit him, you know, top of the shoulder and just a little back on the shoulder. And he's standing there and he's acting like, he's flipping his tail a little bit, but he's acting like he's not even hit. And right. I know he's hit. And he's acting like he's not even hit. He's standing there. I bet he stands there for a minute or so. And he went to take a step with his left foot or his left hoof, and he, like, stumbled a little bit. I mean, it was almost like a, you know, like a drunk guy when he takes a step, you know, he stumbled. And I'm like, oh,
that's,
you know,
the
that's
end.
Yeah, that's something there. And he actually took off running after that. He took off running. Took off running, ran about 75 more yards, stopped and bedded down. And I could barely see his head in my binoculars. And he's got his head up, and he had his head up for about a minute, he took a couple like big, you could tell he couldn't, you know, he was struggling. He couldn't breathe. He was having trouble breathing. And he took a big, like raised his nose up, took a big deep breath or tried to, you know, he was trying to get air, and laid his head down. And I watched his head for 20 minutes and he didn't move.
Okay.
So
at that point, what did you think you hit?
As far as body wise or what kind of deer or what?
Like where you hit him. Cause you said high shoulder, a little bit back, steep mm-hmm. angle. If I was to guess, I'd say front side lung. If you didn't hit liver, you definitely got diaphragm.
I thought, looking at the arrow, cause the arrow, I mean, it was sticking out. With the steep angle I hit, I thought I got double lung.
Okay.
I thought I had to have both lung because, I mean, it went in him enough, but as steep the angle was, I mean, I was thinking I definitely got one lung. I mean, I could have got two. And you know, there's a lot of arteries right behind that shoulder, you know, as well. So I didn't really know. I just knew that I unfortunately hit him a little forward than I wanted to be perfect. You know?
Oh, okay.
I mean, obviously we don't want to hit him. And see what I mean? I hit him. When I said back, I meant like I hit him on the top shoulder, you know, the front shoulder, the top front shoulder, but just the hair on the back side of the front shoulder, if that makes sense.
Okay. Okay. And what was there, an exit route? I mean, was there a pass through or?
No, it was like, I got 7-8 inches of penetration.
Okay. I gotcha.
I mean, I hit him like, you know, I hit him pretty square on the top of his shoulder, but it was a steep angle. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, perfect.
His head lays down. You watch him for 20 minutes. Head's not coming back up. Did you, knowing now, okay, I just killed a deer and I got a presentation in X amount of hours or minutes or whatever. So
yeah,
what kind of was going through your mind at that point?
Well, I called one of my brothers and talked to him about it and watched him. And I mean, he didn't move. So I got down, you know, checked the blood. There was blood. There was quite a bit of blood actually. And I followed it up and I got to where I could glass him a little bit. Cause I wanted to get where I could glass his like stomach, you know, and see if I can see him breathing or anything. And I mean, there was nothing. So I walked up there and got on him and he had blood just pouring out of his front shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, out of the top of it. So there was, had to be some kind of artery in there that I hit. But anyway, I got there and I'm, you know, having, just enjoying it, you know, enjoying the moment. I mean, it was the biggest deer of my life. Probably, it's not the oldest deer, but definitely the biggest inchwise deer that I've ever been able to, shoot.
Man,
so.
this deer's body is impressive. He looks like a pit bull. I mean, if I'm looking at this buck, I'm saying, you know, if he's not four, he's five.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. I mean, I killed a 9-year-old at our, on our family farm, you know, he was like 106 inches on his way down one year, but, that was a pretty cool experience. But anyway, this was by far, you know, super awesome. I mean, he's a, this guy, this deer is a tank, and I'm thinking, I'm looking at my watch and it's 8 o'clock and I'm like, oh my, what, you know, what am I going to do? So, thought about calling and canceling on him, but, didn't want to do that to, I mean, there's, you know, 75, 80 kids that I'm going to be speaking with. So, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go through the process, make sure I, you know, make sure I clean him, and just see how far I get on the drag out, you know, and see where I'm at here. You know, it's, it was cool out that morning. I can come back around three and do the rest of it if I need to. So I go get the truck. I drive down, drive through the hay field, get down right next to where, basically where the stand is, and walk down there and start cleaning him and get him cleaned up. And I start to drag. Okay. And this drag was rough. So, I drag him probably 150, 200 yards to the ridge, get him, and the ridge is what's killing me. So the ridge was, it's pretty steep, and getting him up that ridge was rough with, by myself. I can assure you on that.
And
getting him in the truck
had,
was a whole different story.
40 minutes to do this all in. Because you had to get in a car and go drive and get blood off your hands and put on decent clothes and
So we, I mean, we, it was like a, like, you know, I've done like, I work out every once in a while, but you know, I've done some CrossFit workouts, you know, how you do things for time, you know, it's like, like you have 20 minutes to do this workout and all that. I felt like I was doing a CrossFit workout because I had a certain amount of time. I had to get this deer drug out. So, you know, I drug him out, got him in my truck and headed to, you know, the property owner's barn, and I was going to hang him there. So, you know, everything just, I mean, it was literally just everything worked out perfect. I mean, it, got him hung, changed into khakis and a button up and washed my hands a little bit. And I was there at about 15 minutes late, and you know, they were wanting to hear the story. So everything was good.
Hey, just 15 minutes late. That's so, all right.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Yeah. But it was a very memorable experience. That's for sure. And was able to, you know, my dad, my brothers were able to come up that evening, and then they actually started their hunt the next day. So it was awesome.
Man, that's awesome. Absolutely gorgeous deer. I mean, the picture of this animal, is very impressive from the, and he's a 9-pointer. Is he a 9 or a 10?
He's a mainframe 10. Okay. And then he's got a split brow. So yeah, that one picture, I don't think you can, you probably can't see the G4 on the right side, but, he had a little, small G4
big,
on the right side. So
big body deer, beautiful. His cape is what's impressive to me. It looks like a beautiful cape.
Yeah, it was a beautiful cape. I'm excited to, he's already at the taxidermist, and he's, I'm excited to see what he looks like. So he's going to be a pretty one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He was a beautiful deer.
So, you know, just for the listeners, did you happen to score him at all or estimate a score on him?
Yeah. Yeah, we scored him. Yeah, we scored him that evening. He scored a 149 and 7/8.
149.
So
nice.
He was a beautiful deer, and we, you know, and then my brother started their hunt the next day, and my dad, and they had an enjoyable one. And my brother killed he was a six. He had to be 6 or 7. I'll shoot you a picture of him. He had the biggest head on him I've ever seen.
Yeah. On big a deer. Body. What was the, what he ended up shooting?
Oh yeah. What's that?
What was the, eight, 10? What was he, what did he shoot?
It was a mainframe 10. He scored like 141, I believe.
Gotcha.
But he was just, the body on this deer
beast
was ridiculous. And that deer was not leaving that doe bedding area for like days. We saw him for, you know, Shane and they had been hunting him. They hunted him for like 2 straight days, and they'd see bits and pieces of him, but he was like living in this doe bedding area.
Yeah. Wow. Well, so, he's smart. You know, he's like, hey,
yeah, he is.
I'm going to make the ladies come to me.
Exactly.
So,
no kidding.
Well, hey, man,
no kidding.
So, awesome story. Beautiful animal. Congrats on the hunt. And, man, good luck the rest of the season down there in Missouri, and good luck on all your future seasons.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Big shout out to Jeremy for taking time out of his day to hop on the podcast and chit chat with us. Huge shout out to all of you, all of you, all of you, all of you for taking time out of your day to listen to me talking to a microphone, man. I really appreciate it. I don't know why this popped into my head, but it makes my heart full. So thank you. Other than that, huge shout out to all the partners of this podcast. We have Vortex Optics, Prime Bose, Onyx, and Ozonix, and Lacrosse, and Wasp Archery, and Ripcord, and Lone Wolf. Please go out and support the companies that support this podcast, because if it wasn't for them making this, I couldn't be telling you, you know, sharing this podcast with you. So when you support those companies, you tell them I sent you, and they support me again, and it comes full circle. And that's where I really have to thank you guys. But other than that, man, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you download this podcast. Share it with your friends. Go to Instagram and Facebook and subscribe to not only the Nine Finger Chronicles, but the Sportsman's Nation as well, or follow along and like there. And man, shotgun season in Iowa is coming real fast. Probably have some content about that coming up here pretty soon. Other than that, if you're going to be in a tree, do yourself a favor and wear your damn safety harness. Have a good rest of the week.